Well, coming up is The Space Show. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, hey, it's the winter solstice. We won't be talking about that, but just thought you might like to remember it's the winter solstice. And on the show, Woman of Space, the Woman of Space in Music and Talk.
Outer space is closer to Melbourne than Geelong, Ballarat or Bendigo. The Space Show, Wednesdays at 7pm.
The first man in space was Yuri Gagarin, who made one orbit of the Earth on 1961, April the 12th. 60 years ago, last Friday, Valentina Tereshkova rode Vostok 6 to orbit, spent 3 days orbiting our planet, then landed back in the Soviet Union. The world's first spacewoman was a worldwide sensation. Her call sign was Chaika, which is Russian for seagull. She therefore became known as the Space Seagull. 2 years later, Konstantin Listov and Lev Kondreyev got together and composed the music for and the lyrics of a song to be sung by Alexei Martinov. Here is their song, Song About the Space Seagull.
На воне девочка простая, в луга ходила вечером к реке. С ней разговор вели нам чаевской, а под небесным птичьим языком. Следя за быстрым круговым полетом, запах ярославских трав, тянулась валя к сказочным высотам, на круте дне взволнованно дыша. Чайки, чайки, белоснежные перья, много песен о вашей судьбе. Есть народе, какое поверье, светишь чайку, удача тебе. Прошли года, и обернулась былью, мечта ребенка чайкой стать живой. Голодчи сновали в космос крылья, послала в путь рассветный зарекой. Гордимся мы судьбой и жизнью славной, отважной чайки голубых широт. Волжаночкой, звездою Ярославной, чайки, чайки, белоснежные перья, много песен на вашей судьбе. Есть в народе такое поверье, встретишь чайку, удача.
In 1960, in the United States, former flight surgeon William Lovelace, as a private venture, tested 13 women with the same medical tests as had been applied to the famous seven Mercury male astronauts. Jerry Cobb was one of those women. Despite pleas to NASA, the women were never allowed to become astronauts. Now, this song, Promised the Moon, is about Jerry Cobb and the other members of the group that later became known as the Mercury 13. Here's Kraken with Promise the Moon.
Mastered aviation records broken, proving you the best. You passed the Rorschach psychological and isolation
time.
from Canada. That's Kraken for 2019 recording. And since they did that recording, Jerry Cobb did actually go into space on a suborbital flight, you know, that tourist flight, courtesy of Jeff Bezos and his Blue Origin group. This is The Space Show.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
We're on The Space Show. We are looking at the woman in space, celebrating a number of important anniversaries. Well, 20 years and 2 days after Valentina's flight, the United States orbited its first woman. 40 years ago, on 1983, June the 18th, Sally Ride was a crew member aboard the STS-7 space shuttle mission. 2 years later, April Maston was wishing she had learned to fly, just like Sally Ride.
There are colored plates on my windowsill. The morning sun comes rushing through them and shines the light of Saturn rings around my cup of coffee as I sit and dream. Mornings are my favorite times. The air's alive with the buoyancy. It's later in the afternoon that this gravity starts to get to me. And sometimes, once in a while, I wish I could learn how to fly.
Move forward 6 decades from Valentina Tereshkova and 4 decades from Sally Ride, and we now have the era of commercial spaceflight and suborbital near-space experiences. The participation of women in these flights is no longer remarked upon. Sirisha Bandla is an Indian-born United States citizen who flew on Virgin Galactic's Unity 22 suborbital mission to an altitude of 86 kilometres on 2021 July the 11th. At the time, she was Vice President of Government Affairs and Research Operations for Virgin Galactic. Bandla had hoped to become a NASA astronaut, but was ineligible on medical grounds due to her eyesight.
Way ho, Sirisha, go out of the blue sky and into the black. Went into space and came safely back. Inspiration to us below. Virgin's VP of Government Affairs. Way ho, Sirisha, go. She went beyond where eagles dare. Inspiration to us below. Sir Richard Branson chose her to fly. Way ho, Sirisha, go. On spaceship two to go up to the sky. Inspiration to us below. Way ho, Sirisha, go. Out of the blue sky and into the black. Went into space and came safely back. Inspiration to us below. Out there in space, a glorious gem. Way ho, Sirisha, go. A victory for education and STEM. Inspiration to us below. Hero to young girls like no one before. Way ho, Sirisha, go. Shattered glass ceiling all over the floor. Inspiration to us below. Way ho, Sirisha, go. Out of the blue sky and into the black. Went into space and came safely back. Inspiration to us below. No one will know what the future will bring. Way ho, Sirisha, go. Now that she's earned her astronaut wings. Inspiration to us below. Back on the ground, it must feel so sour. Way ho, Sirisha, go. We welcome you now to this space happy hour. Inspiration to us below. Way ho, Sirisha, go. Out of the blue sky and into the black. Went into space and came safely back. Inspiration to us below. Inspiration to us below.
And we note that Virgin Galactic made a test flight last month and is due to make its first commercial flight sometime between June 27 and June 30 this year. There will be three passengers from the Italian Air Force and the National Research Council of Italy to conduct microgravity research. And Virgin Galactic plans a second commercial flight from August, and thereafter monthly, they hope. Well, no one funded by the Australian government has ever flown in space. However, the first government-sponsored Australian astronaut is now in training. And, surprise, surprise, it is a woman, not a man. European Space Agency astronaut Frank De Wijn, the head of the European Space Agency's European Astronaut Centre in Cologne, welcomes the new class of astronaut candidates, including Catherine Burnell Pegg from Australia.
Welcome everybody from my side here in the European Astronaut Centre. Of course, it's a very joyful day for us. It was a very joyful day on the 3rd of April when the new class started their training here, but it's very joyful to see. It's of course great that after a period of selection, which lasted about 2 years, and the final announcement of the class of 2022 at the last ministerial conference, that we have now our astronauts here present in the center, that they are working and training here in their daily lives. And of course, it's very good for us and for all the people involved, but especially for the astronauts. We are very proud here at ESC because not everybody is doing basic training for the International Space Station. Actually, today, it's only GSC, so our colleagues from NASA, in Star City in Russia, and here at ESC that we implement basic training for astronauts that fly to the International Space Station. Not only, and that is different from 2009, not only do we do the basic training of our own astronauts, but for the first time as well, we train astronauts from another country. Catherine is here with us from Australia, seconded by the Australian Space Agency. Of course, this is regular that this happens in Houston and in Star City, but for ESA, this is the first time. And again, it's a tribute to the quality of our training here. And then, of course, we need to outlook. What will be the outlook of this class that is starting training here? The basic training will last for about 13 months. It will end next year in May. And then we will be ready to assign them to the first mission to the International Space Station. Our plan is to have the next flight of one of the candidate astronauts from the 2022 class to the ISS in 2026. So that is also something to look forward to. But of course, it's not one flight like we have done with the 2009 class. They have all been able to fly quite quickly, and we intend to do the same. So the aim is that before 2030, before the end of this decade, all of them will have had the opportunity to fly to space and to fly to the International Space Station.
Now, so far as I am aware, no one has yet written a song about Catherine. In its stead, I offer this song about a young woman who ignores her mother's advice. And we hear what happened. And this is a fresh approach to the Peggy Seeger song, Space Girl Song, and it's sung by Sunny Larson. She recorded this in 2019.
I did, I did, I did, and I
the induction ceremony of the new astronaut class, David Parker, the Director of Human Spaceflight and Robotic Exploration at the European Space Agency, announced that an agreement had been reached to send an European astronaut to orbit the moon.
Now, we're going towards the moon and we've made the first steps. Europe is now on the critical path for sending humans to the moon through the Artemis program, thanks to the European Service Module built in Europe, technology to take humans to the moon. Now, it's the technology we use to go to the moon that's special, but the people that make it happen across the European Space Agency, especially here in the Astronaut Centre, that makes this all possible. Where are we going to send our astronauts to, first of all, is the Lunar Gateway. We are now building humanity's most distant research outpost. Europe is right at the heart of this program to have a permanent presence around the moon with the Lunar Gateway. And from 2025, this station will become operational. And we have already agreed that 3 ESA astronauts will fly on Artemis missions to the Gateway. And so that's an exciting next step to look forward to. But we don't leave it there. Our plans for lunar exploration are ambitious. We want to be there permanently. It's a museum of 4.5 billion years of solar system history, so we really need to explore that museum properly and bring back all the knowledge and skills we can gain by exploring the moon. And to do that, we need the infrastructure. This is the first piece, the Gateway. The second piece is all the communications and navigation infrastructure that we will need, and we're pioneering that by working in a commercial partnership with industry to develop lunar communications and navigation satellites, starting in 2025. But we also need to get our science and our technology to the surface of the moon, and that's why we're building the Argonaut landers. That will start, thanks to the decisions of the last Council of Ministers last year, with the Argonaut program this year. We'll start selecting the industry and the companies and all the organisations that will build these landers to take Europe to the moon in the 2030s.
And who knows, perhaps that European will be a woman. This is The Space Show.
88.3 Southern FM.
On this evening's Space Show, we are celebrating the 60th anniversary of the first woman in space, a Russian, and the 40th anniversary of the first American in space. Now, Kerry Doherty is a management team leader at the Space Discovery Centre in Adelaide. She's a former curator at the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney. And she spoke to the Space Association of Australia in 2021 about women in space.
Now, it wasn't until the 1970s that cultural views began to change enough in the United States that NASA finally selected its first group of female astronauts in 1978 as part of the 8th astronaut group. And these 6 ladies were chosen as mission specialists for the space shuttle program. And you can see that they were a group as talented as any group of men selected for the astronaut program. Of course, they were not selected as pilots at this point. Many of them, although did in fact have piloting skills, but they were selected as mission specialists for their scientific and technical competence. And it's interesting that once NASA finally selected its first female astronauts, we start to see the appearance of much stronger female characters, particularly in television. Some of you may have seen the old Buck Rogers serials from the 30s, Buck's love interest, Wilma Deering, who in the Buck Rogers series of 1980 is suddenly turned into a very kick-ass military officer, Colonel Wilma Deering. Star Trek finally gets its first female starship captain in the 1990s with Captain Janeway. And, of course, in the 2000s, we see Starbuck from 1978's Battlestar Galactica transformed into another kick-ass female character, the new Starbuck. So just the selection of those female NASA astronauts started to bring about some changes across the whole area of science fiction popular culture in depicting female astronauts. So these first mission specialists started to fly in the 1980s. And the interesting thing here again is that the Soviets hadn't given up on the idea of pipping the Americans to space first. And so when it was announced that Sally Ride would become the first American woman in space and fly on the shuttle in 1983, they quickly whipped Savitskaya up to the Salyut space station in 1982. And Savitskaya was the first female astronaut, female cosmonaut to fly since Tereshkova. It was rather unfortunate that when the female cosmonaut team was first fly either a Voskhod or a Soyuz mission, that would be an all-female mission and would include a spacewalk. Sergei Korolev unfortunately died in 1966. And when he passed away, the political support for the female cosmonaut team just died away. And so those women were disbanded as a cosmonaut group. But Svetlana Savitskaya was recruited, as I say, to again become the first or the second Soviet female cosmonaut who would fly ahead of the first American astronaut and be the first to take up residence on a space station. So she was on the Salyut 7 space station. And in 1984, when Kathy Sullivan was about to become the first woman to make a spacewalk, the Soviets decided that they would pip the Americans again, and they sent Savitskaya up to conduct the first female spacewalk a couple of months ahead of ahead of Kathy Sullivan. Kathy Sullivan's actually a very interesting woman because not only was she an astronaut, she later became the administrator of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. And in just in 2020, she became the first woman to challenge to travel to the bottom of the Challenger Deep, which of course is the deepest part of the ocean. So she has literally been from the depths to the stars. Very, very interesting person herself. She's written a really good autobiography, actually. But again, in when it was announced that Shannon Lucid would become the first female American astronaut to travel to the Mir space station, the Russians again thought, well, we better get in ahead of this. We can't have an American female on Mir before we've had a Russian female on Mir. And so Yelena Kondakova was recruited, that's her here, as the first female Russian to work on the Mir space station. And in fact, she was there for 169 days. So for a while, she held the record for the longest female space flight until Shannon Lucid's flight, which was 179 days. And I actually think that the Americans kept her there the extra 10 days to make sure that they took that record away from the Russians. And Shannon's record actually stood until another woman, who I'm going to talk about in a little while, made her first flight in 2007. Seen women progressing in their careers, doing the same kinds of things, as I've said before, as the male astronauts do. So Kathy Thornton became the first military woman to fly on a military shuttle mission. Then in 1995, Eileen Collins she was actually the first female pilot in 1995, and then became the first female shuttle commander in 1999. And she was also selected to command the return flight mission STS-114 after the for the return to flight after the loss of the Columbia. So NASA obviously had a great deal of confidence in her as a mission commander. There were two other female pilots in the A Shuttle program, and the one you would probably know best, of course, would be Pam Melroy, who herself later went on to command the space shuttle, made several flights to the International Space Station. Since then, she's been here in Australia for a while as an advisor to the Australian Space Agency, and now, of course, is the Deputy Administrator of NASA. Another thing that NASA felt was very important, show that various minority groups in the United States could aspire to careers in STEM subjects generally, and particularly in the space program. So it was quite important that they had astronauts like Mae Jemison, the first Black female astronaut, Eleanor Koa, the first Hispanic woman to fly, Kalpana Chawla, the first Indian-American astronaut, and even Barbara Morgan, who was the original backup for Christa McAuliffe, intended to be the first teacher in space. And Barbara finally became the first educator astronaut in 2007, so 21 years after the Challenger disaster. Actually, one thing I didn't mention, with Sally Ride, we know now that she was the first LGBTQI person in space, but during her period as an astronaut, she kept her sexuality as a private matter. And it was not until after she left NASA that she actually came out openly as lesbian. So it was unfortunate that, despite the fact that NASA had opened up enough to allow or to recruit women and women from the various minority groups, they were not open, and the society at the time was not open to accepting that you could also have diverse sexuality as well as a diverse ethnic origin. One of the other interesting things is that for several countries, apart from NASA and the Soviet Union, or America and the Soviet Union, the first space travellers have been women. For Canada, for example, Roberta Bondar, space shuttle, Helen Sharman, the first Briton to fly in space in 1990, Claudie André-Désir Hanier, was not the first French cosmonaut, but she was one of the early Kness cosmonauts to fly, both with the Soviet Union or Russia, and later with the United States. This is Elena Kondakova again, who we've seen earlier. She flew on the shuttle as well as on the Mir space station. Soyeon Yi was the very first South Korean to travel in space. Chiaki Mukai, although not the first Japanese to fly, was one of the early members of the Japanese national team from JAXA. So it's not only American and Russian women who've flown, but women from various other nationalities. And, of course, we've also seen people like Anusha Ansari, who was one of the early female space tourists. China has also recruited women into its astronaut corps. Colonel Liu Yang was the first female Chinese astronaut, sometimes referred to as Taikonauts, otherwise referred to as Yuan Yuan. And she flew in 2012 on the Shenzhou 9 mission. She was actually followed on Shenzhou 10 by Wang Yaoping, who was also the first woman to live on the Tiangong-1 space station back in 2013. She also acted the role, somewhat like Barbara Morgan, of being a teacher in space, and gave the first lessons from space to Chinese children. And of course, more recently, just this last month, she's become the first Chinese woman to make a spaceport on the Tianhe module, which is currently in orbit. And more recently, of course, women have played roles, every role on the International Space Station. Yelena Serova, only the fourth Russian cosmonaut, female cosmonaut. She visited the space station across 2014-2015, spending 167 days. Samantha Cristoforetti, one of the long-term stay ESA cosmonauts. We've also seen in 2013, NASA actually selected Group 21. This was the first time that the number of female and male astronauts in the class had been equal. So there were, you see, four men and four women. And two of those women, Christina Koch and Jessica Meyer, went on to conduct the first all-woman spacewalk in 2019. Christina Koch, in fact, holds the record for the longest single space flight by a woman. She was on the ISS for nearly 11 months between 2019 and 2020. And I wanted to mention in particular this lady, Peggy Whitson, who began as she was part of the biomedical team at Johnson Space Center, ultimately was selected for an astronaut. She's actually now spent the most cumulative time in space for any US astronaut of 665 days. She was the seventh woman to walk in space, and she's made now 10 spacewalks. So she has the most EVAs and the most time spent on EVA, over 60 hours, of all female space travellers. She was the first female commander of the ISS, and she's actually been commanded twice. She was also the first female chief of the astronaut office between 2009 and 2012. And in addition to that, she was the commander of the NEMO 5 mission. This is an aquatic habitat that NASA uses for experiments in crew dynamics, long duration spaceflight, living together, this kind of thing. And so she's, again, another astronaut, aquanaut, who has experience it underwater as well as in space. Pretty amazing woman. Now, we know that in the not too distant future, it's not going to be 2024, but say maybe around 2026, NASA will finally go back to the moon. And last year they announced the Artemis team, which included a number of women. And from somewhere among this group, the first woman on the moon will be selected. We know that NASA has said specifically that the return to the moon in the Artemis program will include the first woman and the first person of colour. So somebody in these groups will represent the first woman and that first person of colour. So that is going to be a very exciting mission when it finally occurs. And perhaps one of these days we'll actually see women and men working together on a mission to Mars as well.
That was Kerry Doherty, a management team member at the Space Discovery Centre in Adelaide, talking to the Space Association of Australia in 2021. And just a note that it is tomorrow going to be 50 years since the Skylab 2 crew returned, the crew that saved the Skylab space station, America's first space station. And if you want to find out more about Joe Kerwin, he's going to be our guest at the meeting by video link, delayed video link. And that's going to be on Monday at between 7 and 9 o'clock at the Golden Gate Hotel, which is at 238 Clarendon Street, on the corner of Clarendon Street and Coventry Street. So please come along. The meeting is free, but you can purchase meals from 6 o'clock. So please come along. Well, this has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie.